We're here on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis, two-thirds down. Hani Easy, there were goats, Debei Tarbu, that belonged to a family called Tarbu, or they came from a place called Tarbu. Davu Mafsidei Leil Rav Yosef, these goats were entering into the fields of Rav Yosef, and they were eating from his fields and causing him a great loss. Amalei Rav Yosef turned to his Talmud Labaye, Zil Emolahu Lamarayhu Dilitzinu. He sent Abaye on a shlichus to tell the owners of these goats that they should guard their goats and make sure that they don't eat from other people's pasture. The Rif has a slightly different girsa. The way that the Shita Mekupetzet explains that girsa is that Rav Yosef wanted to threaten these people with a shamta, with a kind of a nidui, if they continue to be negligent about watching, guarding their goats. Amar Lei, Abai turns to Rav Yosef and sort of questions the very premise of Rav Yosef, namely, that the responsibility here falls on the shoulders of the owners of these goats. Amai, Azel, why are you sending me to say this, to tell them this? Dia Zilna, certainly if I go and fulfill this shlichus, Amrilei, they will counter-argue, Ligdar Mar Gdera Biare. Isn't the responsibility on Mar, that's Rav Yosef talking to him in third person, to fence off his fields? Why does he leave his fields open in such a way that my goats, our goats, could enter into his field? We're not obligated to guard our goats. On the contrary, the responsibility of Shmira is shifted to the owner of the fields. The owner of the fields, in this case Rav Yosef, are responsible, or Rav Yosef is responsible, to protect his fields. And if you look in Tosfos, Divrei HaMaschil Yachli, Tosfos points out here that Abaye really wasn't excited about this shlichus. So he's trying to figure out a way of getting out of it. And therefore he gave Rav Yosef this argument. But really, in truth, even Abaye admits that the premise of Rav Yosef is certainly correct, and the obligation of protecting from hezek falls fully on the shoulders of the owners of the animal, of the owners of the goats, to make sure that they don't go out and damage other fields. And therefore, if they don't watch their animals properly, they certainly have to pay for compensation for the nezek. And this, Tosfos says, is based on what we learned early in this perek on Yud Tes Amud Beis. Ochlo mitoch achanus mishalemes mashi zika. That if the animal is being led through the public domain and it stretches its head out into a store and eats and destroys things in the store, we don't say to the owner of the store, well, you should have been defensive and protected by locking up your store. But rather the responsibility falls full square on the shoulders of the owner of the mazik, of the animal that was mazik. And here too, Abaye was just in a sense offering a counter-argument, rejecting Rav Yosef, but he too, Abaye, agrees to the premise of Rav Yosef, and the responsibility certainly is on the Bala Mazik and not on the Nizak. That's the approach of Tosfos to this sugya, and other Rishonim agree with Tosfos. Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, in the paragraph that starts V'ha, he believes that Rav Yosef was rejected because of the argument presented by Abaye. And the very fact that Rav Yosef said nothing, he was silent, it means that he too agreed, he was convinced by the plausibility of Abaye's argument, and therefore, halacha, says Rabbeinu Chananel, we should paskin not like Rav Yosef, but rather like Abaye. And that means that the responsibility is shifted over to the defensive side of the Nizak, which means Ligdar Gidera Biare. The Nizak is responsible to protect himself by setting up a Shmira. And if he doesn't fulfill his responsibility of Shmira, then that itself is a poter which alleviates the bala mazik of his chiyuv. In other words, if let's say all things were equal, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, if we could neutralize this, what I call e-kiyum shmira on the part of the Nizak, let's say the Nizak did it whatever he could, he was unaware, he was in a coma, he was honest, whatever it might be, then enochinami, the Baal HaShar would be chayav. The Baal HaIzim, in this case, the Baal HaMazik would be chayav. But we turn the situation over, and we create a p'tur in Nizikin based on the fact that the Nizak had a responsibility of Shmir, which he failed, he neglected to fulfill. Now here we have the Rush. The Rush is a major player here in this sugya. And to some extent, the Rush offers a halacha lemaisa compromise between Tosfos Shita and Rabbeinu Chananel. And he suggests the following. There's a fundamental difference between the ear and the sadeh, the city and the field. That which we learned back on Daf Yutes, that we don't hold the Nizak, in the case of the Chanus, responsible, why didn't he lock up his Chanus? That's because inside the city, the owner of the Shara Mazik, of the Behema Mazika, is responsible. The shift, the responsibility is completely burdened by the shoulders of the Mazik. And we don't expect the Nizak to lock up his doors in the city. In other words, leaving animals roaming within the city limits, that's a dangerous thing, and that is a sure recipe for damages, and therefore the responsibility lies fully on the shoulders of the Baal HaMazik. And Abaye doesn't deny that. The issue here is in the sadeh. And when it comes to the sadeh, and the possibilities of animals roaming around and entering into the sadeh, places or generates a square responsibility on the shoulders of the Nizak, the owner of the field, to guard and fence off his field. And that's what Abai was saying here with regard to the goats and the danger of Hezek that they posed to Rav Yosef. That was a case of sadeh. And within the realm of sadeh, Hilchas sadeh Nizikin, the kiyum shmira of the Nizak in a defensive sense is absolutely critical. Therefore, he, the owner of the field, has to put up the fence, and if he fails to do so, we exonerate the owner of the izim, in this case the owner of the mazik, from his responsibility to pay. And in that case, it would seem, in the sadeh case, even Rav Yosef agreed and backtracked as far as the shlichus of Abaye. So again, Abaye would agree that within the city limits, a person who owns a shara mazik or any sort of mazik has to live up to his responsibility of shmira to make sure that his animals don't go out and do hezek. And we don't expect or demand of the nizak to lock up his doors within the city, or the shop owners to lock up their doors. All this, the Rush's presentation, is fine and dandy until we get to the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. Wait a second. E Godar, if indeed, according to Abai's premise, the Nizak on the defensive is obligated, is responsible for his sada to make sure that there's a protective field, protective fence around his field, so that he shouldn't be damaged. is Shein the Chiyuv Rachmona Eich Mishkachas Lei? What case do we have of Shein? Because in every case of Shein, which happens as a Hezek of Achilu B'Shus on Nizak, why don't we shift the blame onto the shoulders of the Nizak and exonerate and alleviate the Baal HaMazik, the Beima HaOcheles, from his responsibility? Because let's point an accusing finger at the owner of the Nizak, the owner of the damaged property, because why didn't he protect his property? Now, according to the Rosh, Lechora, this is not a kash at all, because Shein Mishkachas Lei Be'ir. Why did the Gemara just say that Shein is obligated to pay in the ear? But the answer is, and this is clarified by the Rosh himself, that since Abai said, in the case of Sodeh, the responsibility is on the shoulders of the Nizek, the Baal HaSodeh, and since, number two, the Pasuk says, Ubir Bistei Acher, emphasize the word Sodeh, how do we have a case in a Sodeh where you should be chayv for Shein when the responsibility for Shmira and the negligence thereof falls fully square on the shoulders of the Nizak? Why would the Mazik have to pay? So where do we fulfill, how do we find a scenario which we can fulfill and apply the principle of Ubir Bistei Acher? And the Gemara answers, Kishachotra, Enochinami. The owner of the Soda did what he had to do. He lived up to his responsibility. He fenced off his field. And the reason why Ubir Bisteach, the Baal HaMazik, is chayav to pay, is because his animal dug its way underneath this fence and entered into the field of the Nizak, and that's where he ate his fruits. Now, you might say, well, perhaps the owner of the Mazik did not have to entertain the possibility that his animal would do such a thing. And after all, the Gemara that we learned on Amud Aleph established that Stam Dalsos Chaturus and Eitzel Kelev. Kelev is the kind of animal that digs its way under the fence, but other animals not. Here we're talking about other animals. But perhaps the Gemara is talking about a case where the owner of the Behema, of the Mazik, was notified before the eating of the field that its animal had already dug its way in under the fence to the field of the Nizak, and therefore the owner of the Mazik is a Poshea, not the owner of the Sod, because he did what he had to do, living up to his responsibility by fencing off his field. Inami, the Gemara gives another scenario in which we could fulfill the Pasuk Ubir V'steyach and Yechai Feshein. Did not feel good about Leila. Perhaps if the fence fell in the middle of the night, the owner of the Sodeh has no knowledge thereof. Therefore, we go back to square one, as we discussed earlier, that the Baal HaMazik is chayav, except for the pshia of the Nizak, the ikiyam shmir on the part of the Nizak. That's what creates a new ptur for the Baal HaHezek. Here, there was no pshia on the part of the Nizak, because how is he to know that in the middle of the night his fence fell down? The Gemara goes on with another halacha, also related to Rav Yosef. Machir is Rav Yosef who had darshan publicly the Itema Rabba, they said it was Rabba who presented this din. The Sulkin Li'ela Udinachatin Litachta. Those who came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, or the opposite, those who came from Eretz Yisrael down to Bavel, they all knew this din. Hani, easy, Deshuka. We're talking about goats that are in the possession of the butchers, of the Shochtim, who will slaughter these goats when the time comes. And when is the best time for them to slaughter these goats? It's on the Yom HaShuk. So these shochtim, these katzavim, are taking their pretty time delaying the shechita, because they want to sell their meat at a higher price when there's a great demand, when people pile in and flood the market to buy meat. But we're not going to allow them that luxury to postpone the shechita, demafsedei, because if these izim are damagers and they're causing a loss by eating from other people's food and fields, is masrinan b'marayu treyu tlasa zimnin. Again, we're not going to take the law in our hands immediately. We'll give the shochtim a little bit of time. We're going to warn them once, twice, three times that they should provide the proper shmira. Itzayis, tzayis, if they uphold their chiv shmira, fine. But v'lo, if they fail to listen to all these warnings time and time again, then we go ahead and we shecht these goats. We're not going to allow them to wait longer. And Amrilay will say to them, you know what? Go sell your slaughtered goats for meat even before the Yom HaShuk and take that loss. Tiv amasachta v'kabel zuzach. Remain in your butchery and you'll get whatever you get by selling this meat. And you're not going to have the luxury of delaying and waiting till the day of the shuk and make that extra profit. Tough luck. Because you failed to live up to your responsibility of shmir. You're causing damages to others. We're going to make this takana, and we're going to go ahead and force the shechita prematurely from a financial perspective. Rashi, Dibra Maskil Masrin, points out that even in a situation where these goats are not entering into other people's fields, which is Rishus HaNizak, they're eating and damaging in Rishus HaRabim, which is a Ptur in Shein V'Regel, nevertheless, they're causing damages. And that's the bottom line. And therefore, we're going to force the Shechita prematurely, in quotation marks. The Nemuki Yosef points out that perhaps we could look at this Gemara and the Chiddush of the Sugya in the opposite way. The Chiddush of the Gemara is that we don't shecht the animals immediately. We'll give the shochtim, the katzavim, a little bit of leeway here, a little bit of rope, and instead of shechting these animals immediately, we're going to give them asra, another asra, etc. Rabbeinu Chananel, again, Dibra Maskel V'ha, which we saw earlier, adds that according to Rav Yosef, this story that we're learning now is really l'shitaso. It's consistent with Rav Yosef's opinion, his psak halach, in the case of Izi Debei Tarbu, which we began this sugya today with, that the mazik is responsible to watch his animals to see that they don't damage. Meaning that Rav Yosef argued with Abaye. Again, according to the Rosh, maybe even Abaye would agree, at least with regard to the ear, if you recall our discussion. Here, the izim are clearly causing damages to other fields, and you're allowed to shech them, because the owner of the goat, the owner of the mazik, is responsible according to Rav Yosef. Again, if there's a hezek in the city, even Abaye would agree to that. Now, in the case of fields, Abaye disagrees with Abaye according to the Rosh, and maybe according to Rabbeinu Chananel, Abaye disagrees with Rav Yosef even in the city. We don't know. And he's of the opinion that the chiv shmira is transferred over to the shoulders of the nizak. And Abaye presented that argument in front of Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was shosek, he was silent, and therefore the halacha here is like Abaye. And therefore this hachraza of Rav Yosef, that after the warnings we're going to shech the izim, That's only Rav Yosef l'shita. So we paskin according to Rav Chananel against Rav Yosef, but rather like Abaye, and therefore this second memra, the achrozer Rav Yosef about shechting the izim, is not accepted l'alocha. And even though it's possible that here it's Rabbah who gave this presentation, nevertheless we can't paskin like Rabbah since we've already accepted Abaye, and perhaps even Rav Yosef was modut Abaye. The Mishnah now discusses Shara Mu'at. And it opens with the question, Ezehu Tam. And this question is a little bit odd. What do you mean, Ezehu Tam? Tam is a case of an animal, a shor that was nogeach the first time, the second time, before it became a mu'at on the third time. So what's Ezehu Tam? So the answer is that the subject of this part of the Mishnah is not literally Ezehu Tam, but rather Ezehu Mu'ad Shechozer Lios Tam. We've already established this shor, this ox, as a mu'ad. And the question is, can the shor, once having been established and proven as a mu'ad, can it reinstate its original status and once again become a tam? An afkamina being that it only the Baalim only pay nezek chatzi nezek and not nezek shalem. And that's what this Mishnah at this point is addressing. Ezehu Tam, what constitutes chazara to undermine the status of the shor hamuad and reinstate it as a shor tam? Now, the Nemuki Yosef asks the following question: how does the Mishnah know what is the basis for this premise that there is a halacha of chazara? Perhaps one could argue that once a mu'ad, always a mu'ad. Says Rav Yosef, the Nemuki Yosef, that the Mishnah is predicated on an understanding of the pasuk in Chumash. And a lot of what we'll do today is focused on one particular pasuk in Shmos Chaf Aleph, pasuk Lamed Vav, where it says, Onoda kishartam kishar nagahu mitmol shilshom v'lo yishrenabolav, etc. The language of the pasuk is Noda. Now, Noda sounds like there's some sort of intelligence here that we figured out, or we know that the shor is a shor nagcha. Lechora, the word of the pasuk noda is out of place. It should have just said shor nagachu, which means that the mitzias was that this shor was nogeach three occasions, makes it into a mu'ad. What's the old noda? What's the emphasis on the noda? No, it's not just depend upon the actual reality, the scenario of three negichos, but there's some other yidia here. The mispar negios, hanegichos, is not just the mitzius, but it's a yidia. It's like a chaloshem. And that means that even if it's already been established as a mu'ad, we still have to know that it's a nagchan, which means we still have to know that it wasn't chozer, but there was no chazara. So the Mishnah wants to know, ezehu, when is there a halacha of a possibility of chazara to be mafkia the shame mu'ad and reinstate the original shame tam? The ezehu mu'ad. And now the Mishnah says, okay, that's more of a an understood question. How do you establish the shor as a shor mu'ad? So that is going to be one machlokes. And it's always in our Mishnah going to be machlokes, Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. And then there's going to be another controversy regarding chazara to reinstate the shem tam. So let's go piece by piece and machlokas by machlokas. Mu'ad, says Rabbi Yehuda, kol she'idu bo shlosha yomim. What does it mean, shlosha yomim? Let's take the following scenario. This animal this shor was nogeach, it gored three times in one day. Says Rav Yehuda, the shor had a bad day. The sun was too hot on that day, somebody irked the shor. It was a bad day, bad mood, a belligerent day. But not that the shor is really a belligerent shor. In order, says Rav Yehuda, to establish the shor as a shor muad, what we require is that the shor is nogeach on 3 days. 3 separate days. Now, what are those 3 separate days? Is it Monday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday? 3 consecutive days? Or could it be any 3 days that that serve as a pattern within a framework? In other words, every Shabbos it's nogeach, every Yontif it's nogeach, every other day it's nogeach. Any of the above would establish the shor as a shor hamuad to pay nezek sholim, as long as it was on 3 different days. That's as far as ha'adah is concerned. In other words, the process by which we establish the shor to be a shor muad. Now we talk about ezutah, meaning how can this shor, once established as a muad, revert its status back to that of a tam? What constitutes chazara? Says Rabbi Yehuda, we could have anticipated this. Mishayachzerbo shloshi yomim. In other words, on 3 different days, the shor, which is still a shor muad, saw another shor and did nothing. There was no negich; it was totally passive. So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the ha'od has to take place on 3 different days, and the chazor has to take place on 3 different days. Which means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the shor was nogeach 3 times in 1 day, it's not a muad. Or if a shor muad saw 3 shvarim on 1 day and refrained from negicha, would not become a tam. And the critical element is the days. Rabbi Meir is going to disagree with Rabbi Yehuda on 2 counts, both in terms of how do you establish the shor as a shor muad, and secondly, how do you remove that status and reinstate the shor as a shor tam. Rabbi Meir Omer, muad she'idubo shlosha pa'amim. It means that there was testimony on 3 negichos, even on 1 day, and the chazor v'tam is also even on 1 day. But here, Rabbi Meir, with regard to chazor, throws a little bit of a curveball, just to make life a bit exciting for us. And he says, kol she'yu hatinokos mimashmishin bo v'eino nogeach. Which means, and the Tosefta here in Ketzer HaRegel embellishes this, the Meiri explains, based on the Tosefta, that this concept of mishmush means that between the horns of this ox, the child plays around. I don't know exactly what it does, but in some sense, it does an action of what we call girui, of lachiso, to get the animal angry. And on 3 different occasions, within 1 day, the tinokos started playing around, in a sense antagonizing this shor, and v'eino nogeach, and the shor did not respond. It means that the shor is now a docile shor. It's established itself as a quiet, docile shor, because despite the shisui, the antagonizing, the pulas shisui of the child on 3 occasions, nevertheless, the animal held back. And that would recreate the status of shor tam on 3 occasions on one day. The Rishonim ask the following question. There's a little bit of a confusion here. We're talking about a tinok. Well, wait a second. A tinok is a human being. A shor muad is a shor muad lishvarim, libehemos, but not a muad liadam. And that's a sugi that we learned way back in the beginning of the Masecht on Daf Beis Amid Beis, right? Mu'ud lebehema ina mu'ud liyodam. And therefore, the fact that the shor is not nogeach an adam doesn't prove a thing about whether or not it's belligerent vis-a-vis shvarin. It may be, right, the Gemara says that adam mazlika, man can protect himself. So again, the shor is afraid of man, but it doesn't mean he's afraid of other shvarin. But the answer is, says the Rambam Pirush Mishnayos here, that we're talking about tinokos. This chazara, through the fact that the shor did not attack a human being, in this case a tinokos, is only with regard to a tinokos. A tinokos is in a sense like another shor, because the, you know, the level of antagonizing or leading the shor to want to be nogeach of a tinok and his mishmush is equal to the presence of another shor. Somehow that equalizes each other. And the animal would, if it were really a shor, would have overcome any sort of fear it would have of Adam de Mazel Iske in the case of tinok mimashmish. And that's the Rambam's pshat, and it would seem that if you look at Tosfos Sheyu, he's saying the same thing. Mikomagam Kevin Shanas says Shofel Kokasha Tinokus Mimashmashimbo is Vadai Chozer Likadmuso. The Shita Mekubetzes adds another point, and he says, Rabbi Meir, you should know, is limited to Tinokos because Ashar is not afraid of Tinokos, like he would be afraid of a mature adult. And if it's not nogeach a tinok, even after shisu, even after the tinok antagonized the shor bena karnayim, then for sure it would not be antagonistic towards another shor. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, and everything that we're discussing is Rabbi Meir, that you could have a ha'adah by three negichas in one day, you could have a chazara by three non-negichos in one day, eino nogeach. So then the process of ha'adah and chazara could take place, both of these, on one day. In the morning, this shor ran after three other shvarim, it was nogeach them, it became a muad. In the afternoon, the tinokos on three different occasions were mashin bo, and it wasn't nogeach. So the shor in one day enters into muadus and reverts back to tamus. However, what about, according to Rabbi Meir, chazara of shlosha yomim? Tosus writes, in the same Tosus where we left off, "Falo barav mei lemait ela shalotoel chazor shloshes yomim, ela hishmianu dafilu biyom echad poamim dika chazora kigon al yedei tinokos." Tosus points out that if on 3 days the animal saw shvarim and refrained from goring them, which was the classical definition of chazor according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir would agree that that's chazor. Rabbi Meir only wants to introduce tinokos in order to establish that yom echad, that the refraining of the shor from attacking these tinokos on one day is and constitutes chazora. But just as well, if on 3 days the shor refrains from the nogeach shvarim, that would also constitute a chazara. And here, Tosus is arguing with the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos and also in the Yadah Chazaka, in this Kemom, in Perek Vav. The Rambam is of the opinion that the only way that the shor could be chozer, the chazara itself, is through tinoko shem mashmashim. And that has to be analyzed. The Nuki Yosef is of the opinion that the animal, according to Rabbi Meir, could achieve chazara if on one occasion when the tinok was from a mashmesh, the animal refrained from responding with a negicha. and you don't need three times, because it's only Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah who spells out Chazor on three occasions. Rav Meir, on the other hand, doesn't mention a word about three, meaning even one is sufficient. But one thing is absolutely clear here in this sugya, that the concept of Chazorah within the perspective of Meir has an emphasis here, a unique, singular emphasis on Tinokos Shememashmashin, which means that either in Tinoko Shemashmi there could be a Chazara of three times in one day, or alternatively, according to the Rambam, the only way that you could have Chazara is through Tinoko Shemashmi, or alternatively, according to Muki Yosef, in the case of Tinoko Shemashmi, one time, one refraining is enough to create a Chazara. So clearly, Tinoko Shemashmi is a separate category in the context of Rav Meir. Again, one could ask, where did Rav Meir derive this from? And it seems that Rav Meir is very much entrenched and anchored in Svara, whereas Rav Yehuda, as we'll see in the sugya here, is much more influenced by Psukim and Gzeres HaKosuvs, Yalfusos, and Limud. Let's begin the Gemara. My time with Rav Yehuda. Why does Rav Yehuda require that the Ha'odah process must be spread out over 3 days, and three Negichos on one day would not generate Mu'odus? After all, we have a principle called Chazaka that establishes behavior pattern. If something repeats itself three times, isn't the Shor a very belligerent Shor? So we gave an explanation, logically, just L'Sabras Ha'oza, that maybe the animal had a bad day, but that's not the way the Sugya understands Rav Yehuda. Amar Abaye, Rabbi Yehuda derived this conclusion that it has to be three separate days from the Pasuk. And again, we go back to the same Pasuk we began with in Shmos Chafal, Pasuk Lamed Vav, which is the source of the din of Shar Muad, Onoda Kishar Nagahu Mitmol Shilsham. The Pasuk itself is specifying days. Yesterday, the day before yesterday, Velo Yishmeru Bolav, and then he has to pay Nezek Shalem. If the Pasuk had said Tmol, then we would have said Chad. That means one Negicha that took place yesterday. But Mitmol, says Abaye, the Torah added the word Mem, the letter Mem, I should say, and that is indicating Trey, a second day. Mitmol, as if to say Tmol and the day before Tmol. And then Shilsham goes back to the third day, Tlosa, we have three different days. And then Velo Yishmeru Bolav, then the Shar became, through this three Negichon, three different days, a Shar Muad, and if the owner of the Shar was not careful about watching his Shar, is Asan L'Negicha Revius, on the fourth Negicha, the owner of the Shar has to pay Nezek, Nezek Sholeh. Rav Amar, Tmol Mitmol. When Abaye says Tmol Mitmol, what he's trying to argue is that the Mem here doesn't add anything. It's not an extra Mem to add another day. Chad, it's only one day. Mitmol is from yesterday. That's a normal way of speaking in the Torah's formulation. Shilshom Trey is the second day. Velo Yishmerenu means following the second Negicha. Ha'idna, at the point of the third Negicha, Chayef, the Mazik has to pay Nezek Shalom for Shar Muad on the third Negicha. That's how Rav understands Rabbi Yehuda. Not like Abaye that requires the fourth Negicha, the third Negicha makes him into a Shar Muad. According to Rava, the Shar becomes a Shar Muad already on the second Negicha. And that's what you'll see in Rashi, Dibra Maskil Ason and Dibra Maskil Velo. So the argument between Abaye Rav is not just a theoretical argument about how to interpret Psukim, but there's an afkamina aloch lamaisa, when and at what point in which Negicha generates a chiyuv of Nezek Sholem. Is it the fourth Negicha? That's Abaye, or the third Negicha, according to Rav? Tosus, the Maskil Velo, rejects Rashi, and he thinks that the Machlokas is only what we call Beferish HaMikra. I don't understand the Psukim. Abaye thinks that Velo Yishmerenu relates to the Negicha Revius. Rava thinks that it relates to the Negicha Shlishis, in which it becomes a Muad, but Rava also agrees that it's only after the at the point of the negicha revius, which is not mentioned in the pasuk, ha'idna chayev, meaning in the at the point in which now it becomes a muad in order to engender a chiyuv of tashlume nezek shalem, when it's nogeach the fourth time. Tosis claims that even Rashi changed his mind and rescinded his pshat. And everybody agrees that according to Rabbi Yehuda, they require a fourth negicha. Now the Gemara shifts to Rabbi Meir. For Rabbi Meir, my taima, why does he insist that even three negichas on one day would be sufficient to create a shame, muad, and a chiz, and nezik shalim, the sanya, Amar Rabbi Meir, and here we're turning to Chav Dalet Amar Aleph, Richek negichosav chayov, kirev negichosav lokolshkein. Rabbi Meir introduces a kal v'chomer. We're trying to establish whether or not this shor is belligerent, and it has a propensity to gore. And if the Torah says that on three different days it proves and establishes itself as an agchon, how much more so if it's nogeh three times in one day? That's called a chazaka. And it seems that logically Rabbi Meir is very persuasive in his argument. However, the Gemara has a problem because of the parsha of Zava. And Zava means a woman who sees a Re'ias Dam, which normally would be Dam Nida, but we're talking about a period of time which is called the Yud Alef Yom Shebein Nida L'Nida. And the Parsha of Zova, which is in Vayikra Tezvav, establishes Isha Ki Yizov Zov Doma Yomim Rabim. Chazal say Yomim means 2 days, Yomim Rabim is 3 days, which means that she becomes what's called a Zova Gdola, which generates a Tumah of Zayin Yomim and a Chiv Karman, if she saw three Re'ios on three different days, one after the other. She counts Zayin Nikiyim, she goes to Mikvah, she brings her Karman. And the Gemara now is going to see, in this parsha of Zava Gedola, a proof positive that l'chori you need 3 different days. Why not say that if she saw 3 different riyas on one day, she should become a Zava Gedola? And that's not true. If she sees a riyah on one day, for example, she becomes a Zava Ketana, which means she requires what's called a Tumah of Yom Keneged Yom. All she needs is 1 day. That's Naki, and then she immediately goes to the mikveh. She doesn't bring a karbon, so there's no Tumah Zayin or Chiv karbon, and that's called Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom, unless she became a Zava Gedola through 3 riyas on 3 different days. Omrulei, and that's the argument against Rav Meir. Zava Tochiach. I'm going to reject your kal v'chomer and the logic therein based on the parsha of Zava Gedola. Why? If she saw 3 riyos on 3 different days, tmeya, then she has a tumah of zayin yomi. But kiva riyosa, if she saw 3 riyos on 1 single day, tahora. Tahora means that she's only a shomeres yom kineged yom, and she's not tmeya zayin. Doesn't this upshlug undermine the whole logic of your kal v'chomer? Because if you're telling me that Kirev Lokolshkein, then if she had 3 riyas on 1 day, she certainly should be a Zava Gedola. And therefore, the same logic by analogy we're going to apply to the case of Kirev Negichosav. I'm going to say, no, you need Richuk Negichosav. Again, this is all because Rav Meir is operating within the framework of Svara. Amalehen, Rav Meir tries to defend himself from this kasha from Zava. Zava is not a proof. Hareyu Omer, because there is Gzeres HaKosuf. The Torah says, in the case of a Zav, who's Tomei after seeing 3 Re'ios, again, a Zav is very similar to a Zav, except that there you don't need 3 days, all you need is 3 Re'ios, of something called, in the Torah's language, Tia Tumas Bezovo Rar Besoro, Ezovo. Okay, a certain type of a re'iyah, which is unique to a zav, which is called zov, and the Torah repeats that word zov 3 times, and then it says tumaso he, and there, if the zav has 3 re'iyos, Rashi explains this in Dibro Askla Zav, he becomes tame again shivas yomim, and he needs Zayin Nikim, and he brings a carbon. And that's even through three Re'ios, even without 3 days. And the Torah says, V'zos tiyeh tum oso bezovo. In that parsha, in Vayikra Yutes, Vayikra Tesvav, the Torah adds the word V'zos. V'zos is a mute. And it comes to tell you that in the case of Zav, the Tumas Zav, Zion, and Korban is engendered by Re'ios. Tola Kosuv Es Hazov Berios, V'es Hazova B'yomim. But the Zos is telling me that in the case of Zova, it's not Re'ios, as in Zav, but rather it's Yomim. And therefore, there's no proof here. Had it not been for this Gzeres HaKosuv, the word V'zos, then we would have applied the logic of Kiruv, of Shalosh Re'ios, even to the case of Zova. So in the absence of such Gzeres HaKosuv, the logic that compels us, the compelling logic, is Kirev Lo Kolshkein. But here, because of the word Vizos, we say Vesa Zova B'yomim, that in the case of Zova, in order to engender Hatuma Zova Gdola, you need 3 different days. The Gemara now asks, and this is more of an internal back and forth here on the halachos and the derivations of Zav versus Zov. I mean, my, how do you know the high Vizos Lemute Zova Miri'ios? It's coming to exclude Zova from 3 Re'ios to establish 3 Yomim. Emo, why not say the exact opposite? Lemute Zov Miyomim. Maybe it's coming to tell me that a Zov, if he sees in 3 days, is not tame. In other words, the zov is not matame biyomim. The Gemara answers, Omar Kra, the pasuk there in the same perek says, with regard to mazav, v'hazov es zovo, la'zochar u'vilanakeva. And the Torah combines the status of a zov and the parish of a zov for both male and female. Makish, Zochel, Nekeva, the analogy between the two. Ma, Nekeva, Biyomim. Just like Nekeva becomes Tmeo, Biyomim. Af, Zochel, Biyomim. Meaning, it's not just 3 Re'ios, but it's 3 Yomim. And 3 Yomim applies in the case of Zav as well. The Gemara asks, Vilakish, Nekeva, Lezochel. So why not go the other way? You know, if there's an analogy here that applies Yomim to the Zohar based on Zova, why not apply Re'ios from the Zohar to the Nekeva and say that the Zova Gdola could become such through 3 Re'ios? Is Ma Zohar Re'ios Haf Nekeva Re'ios? And Gemara says Hamiut Rachmana Vizos. That's why the Torah had to exclude Vizos. So the Hekesh is coming to upgrade the Zav to 3 Yomim, and the Vizos is coming to tell you that we diminish Zova Gdola to 3 Yomim and not 3 Re'ios, exclude 3 Re'ios. In fact, the Gemara Umar Reyes. I mean, you have the Hekesh, that's a Rebu, and you have the Vizos as a mute. Why not say the exact opposite? Maybe the Hekesh is coming to tell me that a Zova Gdola could be as such through Shalosh Re'ios, even beyond Echad. The mute of Vizos is coming to tell me that a Zov is not Mitame Biyomim, but rather only Biri'ios. The Gemara says, Mistavra, the logic is, Koi Biri'ios Memayit Re'ios, Koi Biri'ios Memayit Yomim. Let's look at the two psukim. In the Pasuk of Vizos, there we're talking about Re'ios. And therefore it's coming as a mute in Re'ios to tell me that in the case of Zova Gedola, her status cannot be generated by 3 Re'ios on 1 day. But Koi Biri'ios, but the Pasuk of the Hekesh, there he's talking about Re'ios, and it's logical to say that there is a ribui here in terms of the Zav, that he could become Tomei through three Yomim. The Gemara now goes on to analyze a Brisa, which has a similar Machlokes Tanoim to our Mishnah, but a little bit different. So pay attention here. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa, Ezu Muad. And now we start with the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. We're going to see soon that Rabbi Yossi has a very powerful status in Halacha, in Paskin Halacha, in Machlokasin. And both Rab Yossi and the Bar Plukta with Rab Shimon in this price are going to address the same two questions of our Mishnah, namely, how do you establish a Sharmud as such? How do you establish a Tam, once it was a Mu'ud, by rescinding and removing its status as a Mu'ud and reinstating its status as a Tam? So we start with Rab Yossi. Rab Yossi says the following: Kol Shehi Idu Bo Shlosha Yomim, which means that in the other process, Rabbi Yossi accepts Rabbi Yehuda, that you need three separate days, not three negichas in one day. V'tam, however, with regard to the chazara, shiu atinok smashim bo v'enu nogeach, did Rabbi Yossi, meaning on one day, when the animal was, in a sense, instigated by, or antagonized, if you will, by three tinokos on one single day, it reverts back to the status as a tam. So Rav Yossi basically accepts Rav Yehuda as far as Mu'adus is concerned, and Rav Meir as far as Tamus is concerned, meaning Chazara. Rav Shimon is just the opposite. Rav Shimon Omer, Mu'ad kol she'idibo shlosha pa'amim, meaning three negichos in one day, like Rav Meir. So as far as all is concerned, Rabbi Shimon agrees with Rabbi Meir. V'lo amru shlosha yamim ela l'chazara bilvad. But with regard to chazara, to reinstate the status of the shor as a tam, here Rabbi Shimon agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that you need a chazara on three different days, and he rejects the concept of chazara tinokos m'mashpin bo three times on one day. And this brisa is now going to play a pivotal role to determine the final halacha of Ha'adah and Chazara in the Machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir and Mishnah. Om Rav Nachman, Om Rav Hadabar, Rav Halacha, Rabbi Yehuda, B'muad, Shaharei Rav Yossi, Modelo. In other words, what we're going to do now is we're going to accept La Halacha, the Shita Rabbi Yossi. We'll soon see why. And Rabbi Yossi, if you recall, accepted the position of Rabbi Yehuda with regard to Mu'ad, which means we need Shlosha Yomim, T'mol Mitmol Shilshom. And at the same time, Rabbi Yossi embraced the Shita Rabbi Meir as far as Tam with Mishmush of Shalosh Tinokos, the Eino Nogeach. Sharei Rabbi Yossi Modelo, since Rabbi Yossi accepted Rabbi Yehuda in Mu'adus and Rabbi Meir in Chazara, therefore the halacha is as Rabbi Yossi has it. Amalei Rav of Nachman, v'lei mamar halacha k'Rabbi Meir b'muad. Why couldn't Rav Nachman go the opposite direction? Why couldn't he accept the halacha of Rabbi Meir b'muad three times in one day? Sherei Rav Shimon modelo. He's got Rav Shimon on his side. So it's Rav Shimon together with Rav Meir ganging up against Rav Yehuda. And halacha k'Rav Yehuda v'tam, just the opposite. As far as Chazor is concerned, except Rav Yehuda, you have to spread it out in 3 days, and the tinok m'mashmish is not an acceptable form of Chazor Shrei Rav Shimon modelo. Amalei ana k'Rav Yossi svirlei. I accept Rav Yossi. We always pass on Rav Yossi when he argues with other Tanoim. Rav Yossi nimuko imo. The logic of Rav Yossi is always very compelling. He has proofs to establish. Rav Yossi is on a special level. The Rishonim have a debate here where this principle that we pass on Rav Yossi applies even if he's a yochid against the rabbi. And some Rishonim want to go as far, in our case, of course, it's two against two, so it's like one against one. And it makes sense that Rav Nachman would accept Rav Yossi. How far would Rav Nachman go, based on this logic of Nimuko Imo, would he go as far as to say that we pass on Rav Yossi, even if the majority rules against him? Iboilahu, now that we've paskined like Rav Yehuda, that Hadah has to take place over 3 days, Ishlosha Yomim Diktani, what is the nature of this 3 days? What is the goal when witnesses testify that on occasion number one, day one, this show was Nogeach? Witnesses were made on day two. Witnesses were made on day three. Is Liude Torah or Liude Gavra? Or what are we establishing, or whom are we establishing as a Mu'ad? Is it the Shor? And that would be intuitively logical. Or is it the Gavra, the Baal Ashor? He becomes Muad, meaning that he was Poshea time after time after time. On three occasions we warned him, and despite the warning, you've got a Ashor that potentially is a Ashor of Muad, he failed to give, to live up to his standards, his requirements of Shemirah. And what we want to point out over here, which is quite important, is that the violation of the Hasra, to watch your Shor, again, if we're going according to you, the Gavra, took place in the first occasion, after the first Negicha, which would mean that the Bailim only became Muchzakim, they only repeated this performance of Pshia, after the fourth Negicha, because after the first Negicha they got Hasra number one, which they violated. After the second Negicha, Hasra number two. After the third Negicha, when they got Hasra number three, then they violated that Hasra. And if that be the case, that it's only after the fourth Negicha, because again, after the second, after the third, meaning, the fourth Negicha, which came after the third Asra, establishes the Bailim as a Muad. And assuming that you cannot have a simultaneity in which you establish Muadus and you pay Nezek Shalom, it's got to be the next Negicha, we're going to have to require the fifth Negicha, because the Bailim, as under the law of Yudei Gavra, only became Muadim after the fourth Negicha, so they can only be Chayiv in the fifth Negicha. So Tosus points out at Dir Maskel E that no, that once the Hasra came, that the Shor was Nogeh three times, that's when the Bailim are Chayev in Shmirah. And if after the Bailim were notified that the Shor was Nogeh three times, in other words, let's say that after the third Negicha, the Edim came in to testify in all three Negichos. At that point, the Bailim, if they violate the Hasra following the third Negicha, become Yehudei Gavra, they have to pay Nezek Shalom on the fourth Negicha. So it comes out, according to Tosfos, that we don't have to have Hasra between or following each Negicha. We can have Hasra against the Bailim to establish Yehudei Gavra after one time period of Eidus, meaning the Eidus on all three Negichas. So between the first Negicha and the second Negicha, up to the third Negicha, there was no Asra of the Bailim. All the Eidus came in after the third Negicha, and now, once we have that clincher, that there was a third Negicha, that engenders a Hasra of Yehudei Gavra. Not all the Rishonim agree with Tosfos. Rabbeinu Peretz is of the opinion that every Negicha has to follow the Eidus on the previous Negicha. You know, it's between Negicha A and Negicha B, there had to have been testimony and a warning against the Baal Ashor in order to establish Yehudei Gavra. So Yehudei Gavra means that time after time after time, the Bailim violated the Hasra. Again, he's still going to be chayv on the Negicha Revius, because at the time of the Negicha and Revius, the Bailim was already huchzak to be a Poshea B'Shmiras Hashar after the Asra that came through following the Negicha Shlishis. But just to summarize, we have Machlokas Rishonim, if there has to be, in the context of Yehudei Gavra, if there has to be Asra between each Negicha, or one Asra after the third Negicha is sufficient. So the Gemara says, "L'mainaf gemina, the asu tlosa kite sadi bechad yoma." If let's say the third nizak brings three pairs of edim, three kitos of edim, following the third negicha, to testify on that day against the shor, certainly that would be fine in terms of a process of Yehudei Tura, Iyamrit Yehudei Tura, if each one of these Edom are testifying about a different day, so you have three different days, is Miyayid, the Shor is a Shor Muad, but Iyamrit Yehudei Gavra, Lo Miyayid. In such a case, the Gavra is not a Muad. Why? Meimar Omar, he could have said, Hashta Hudikom Asadi Bi. Now, you're giving me Asra for three different kitos to watch my shor, and the Torah requires that there be asra on three different days. Because again, Tmol mitmol shilsham, according to Rabbi Yehuda, establishes three different days in order to establish Ha'adah. If we're talking about Liyudei Shorah, Liyudei Tura, then those three different days represent three negichas on three different days, that's fine, because we have the evidence to establish that. But if we're talking about three different days of three different Asuros, then we have a problem here, because all three pairs of Edom came in on one day. And that would not establish the Gavra as a Muad. Again, when we speak about three different Kitos, that's Lav Dafka. I mean, it could be the same cat that happened to see and witness all three Negichas and testified in them. In any event, keep in mind that the Gemara insists here on three different days, because we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. And the Rishonim, the Raivah Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, they want to know, what about Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir holds that you can create Mu'adis on one day. And therefore, would this suffix in the Gemara apply within the context of Rabbi Meir? And the answer is yes. Even according to Rabbi Meir, where you could have a shor that became a shor mu'ad on one day, we could still have this suffix and vacillate about this issue. For example, let's say three kitos would come into Bezdin after the third negicha. Would we have mu'adus in this case? Or maybe perhaps we need that Eden would have to come after each negicha. Now the Gemara says the following, Toshma. Ein hashor nasa mu'ad ad she'idu bo bifnei bailim u'bifnei bezdin. And some of the girsa shenemar v'huad biba'olav. So the process of ha'odah requires testimony, and of course there's no testimony outside of bezdin. He'idu bo bifnei bezdin v'shalo bifnei bailim. There's another requirement. It's not enough that ha'odah is a result of edus ha'godah bifnei bezdin, but we also need bifnei bailim, that the owner of the shor has to be there at the time that the Edom testify in Bezdin, shalo bifnei Bezdin, eino nasa mu'ad. If two witnesses will testify in front of the Bailim, but not in front of Bezdin, that's not called testimony. It's eino nasa mu'ad she'idu bo bifnei Bezdin ufnei ba'alim. You know, as far as ha'odas ha'shor is concerned, there's no kabbalas edus shalo bifnei Bezdin, there's no kabbalas edus even in the presence of the Bailim. We need that the Bailim be there, but we need that it happen in front of Bezdin. The Braisa continues and gives us other conditions that have to be fulfilled in order for this Ha'adah process to take place. He'idu shnayim b'rishona, two Edim testify in the first Negicha, u'shnayim, another two Edim testify b'shnia, regarding the second Negicha, Ushnaim, a third pair of Edim, are testifying bishlishes for the third Negicha, and now the Shor becomes a Shor Muad based on the collection, the integration of all these three testimonies. Harekan Shalosh Edios. And Rashi explains, what does it mean these are three independent Edios? Normally we have a Lacha of Batla Miktsasa Batla Kula. Let's say, for example, one of these three kitos becomes posul. Nevertheless, the other two kitos still remain in place. They're valid, and we don't undermine them and disqualify them. The butler miktsasa butler kula principle doesn't apply here, because each kat is a separate kat. Of course, you could ask the question, that's a sugyan babasra about it. Dover v'lo chatzi dover. But the answer is, it's not a chatzi dover, because each kat is being made on a chiv of chatzi nezek. I mean, there's another dimension to their edus, and that is the potential that it could lead, if there are three negichas and three edios, to nezek sholem. But right now, each kat stands on its own independent of the other two, and the principle of botla miktsasa botla kula does not apply. V'hein edus achas lehazoma. However, with regard to Hazoma, we do have an integration. That means that if there'll be Hazoma on these Kitos of Edim, they're all going to have to chip in to pay Nezek Shalem. Even though, again, you might argue, well, the first Kat and the second Kat were only testifying a Chatzin Nezek, but no, we're going to integrate the three together. And that's going to be the issue here in the Hemshech Hasugya. Now, Nimtzeis Kat Rishona Zomemes, if two Edim say Imonu Yisem vis-a-vis the first Kat that was made on the first Negicha, Harei Kan Shtei Edios, we're still left with the second two Kitos, and we got two-thirds of the way now to establish Nezek Shalem, and the Bailim will have to pay Chatzin Nezek for the first two Negichos. Now, the owner of the Shar, Vahu Potin, he doesn't have to pay Nezek Shalem based on the third Negicha because there was Hazom against one of the pairs of Edom, so we only have two Negichos. Vahain, now, the first pair of Edom, Pturim. In other words, since there was only Ha'adah on one of the pairs of Edom, which means now that there is no chiyuv of Nezek Shalem because we're only left with two pairs of Edom, and that's not enough to establish Nezek Shalem. So the Edom Zomimim would only have to pay Chatzi Nezek. And the same thing applies Nimtzeis Kat Shnia Zomemes. If there was a Hazom against not only the first Kat, but also the second Kat, we still have the third Kat, and we don't have a Hazoma on Nezek Sholem, we only have a Hazoma on Chatzi Nezek, and that's what the Edom will pay. Harekan Edus Achas, but we just said that with regard to Hazoma, there's a halacha here of Edus Achas. What does that mean? So that's going to be the case, which we'll have in just a second, Nimtzeis Kat Shlishis Zomemes, where there was Hazom against not only Kat A and Kat B, but also against Kat C. So if there was Hazom only against Kat A, or against Kat A and Kat B, is who Potur, meaning the owner of the Shar, is Potur from paying Nezek Sholem. Obviously there's only one Negicha to deal with, Vehen. And the Edim Pturim, meaning the din of Kasha Zomam, will be fulfilled by paying Chatzi Nezek. Because there wasn't Hazoma on all of them, and we have Halach and Hazoma, as Rashi points out here, of Ad Shia Zumu Kulam. But now Nimtzeis Kat Shlichus, even the third Kat turned out to be Muzomim, so there's Edim Zomam on all three. Nimtzeis Kat Shlichus. Nimtzeis Kat Shlishis Zomemes is Kulam Chayovim. They all three Kitos of Zomim have to chip in to pay the additional half a Nezek, meaning the increment between Chatzi Nezek and Nezek Sholem. V'alzenemar v'asisim lo kasher Zomam lasos liyoch. That's the Lashon of the Brisa. So we have a number of issues here. First of all, we want to analyze this Brisa from the perspective of the Machlokes, whether or not Yehudei Gavra, Yehudei Tura. And secondly, we want to analyze this Brisa from the perspective of Hazoma. Why did the first two Kitos become responsible under the law of Kasha Zomam for paying Nezek Sholem, meaning contributing to Nezek Sholem, if their Avios came before the third Kat? And they're not related to the third Kat, as we saw before. They're independent of the third Kat. So they're just testifying on Chatzi Nezek Bilvad. So let's pick this up one by one. E Amrit Gemara says, Li Udei Tura Shapir. I can understand. According to the Mande Omer of Yi Udei Tura, why the first two Kitos have to pay even the Muadis part, if they become Edim Zomimim. Why? Because we can talk in the Brisa about a case where the third Negicha took place. The Nizak, in the case of the third Negicha, brings in three Kitos of Edus, each Kat to testify to different Negicha. Obviously, and this is what Rashi explains, the Kavana, the intention of the Nizak, and therefore of the Edim, is to establish this Shar as a Shar Muad to pay Nezek Sholem. Meaning, why is the third Nizak bringing in the first two Kitos? Obviously, he wants to integrate the testimony of the first two Kitos together with the third Kito to establish that this animal is indeed a shor muad. So the first two kitos are on board here, so to speak. They are, what word should I use? They are collaborators in establishing the shor as a shor muad. Otherwise, why did the nizak hashlishi subpoena the first two kitos of Edim? And the Pasuk HaShezovim indicates that the intention of the Edom was to do X, and that's what we're going to punish them with. And clearly the Edom had an intention of linking up with the other two Kitos in order to establish the Shar as a Shar Muad to pay Nezek Sholem. And here we turn to Daf Chav Dalet Amid Beis. Ela I Amrit Li Yehudei Gavra. If we're going to assume that when the Torah requires 3 days, you need a hasra between each negicha, it means that these three kitos did not come on one day. How could you apply the principle of kasha zomam when each kat came on its own day? Lemru hanakamoy, let the first two kitos claim, anan, we, miavi adina de bosar, shloshiyome, osu hanimi adile. We didn't know that on 3 consecutive days there were Edim who were going to testify and establish that this Shar is a Shar HaMuot, meaning that the Bailim, Yehudei Gavra, have to pay Nezek Sholim. We only came to Mechayev Chatzi Nezek. So again, if you hold the Yehudei Turah, all these Kitos came on the same day, testifying on 3 different days, testifying about 3 different days, and they were subpoenaed by the third Nizak, and therefore they understand clearly that they are part of a process here to establish the Shar as a Shar Hamuad, and therefore Vasis Malokasha Zama. But in the case of Yehudei Gavra, when the Edom come in to testify in 3 different days, where is the Kasha Zomam here? Why do you fault the first two Kitos as collaborators? Each kat is coming independent on a different day to testify about the Shor, and it's Negicha that generates a Chatzi Nezek, B'Toras Tam. Rav Kahana says, wait a minute, I'm not even sure if this works out and makes sense if you hold Yehudei Turah. Because Omar Rav Ashi, I'm Risa L'Shmaita coming to Rav Kana, when I told over the sugi to Rav Kana, Omar Lee, he responded, Yehudei Torah Minicha, does it work out even if I hold Yehudei Turah? Lema Hanach Basroi, even if I assume that all 3 Kitos came on the same day to testify on Negichos on 3 different days, Anan Minoya Dina Dechol Dekoi Beidina Lasude B'Turah Kasi. Why do I assume that since 3 Kitos of Edom came in on the same day, that each Kat is aware of the fact that the other Kitos are standing in Bezdin for the express purpose of testifying against this Shar that it was no Geah? I mean, these are anonymous faces. I don't know why they're coming into Bezdin. What, is there a sign, you know, posted on their around their necks that we are coming in order to establish this Shar as a Shar Nagchan? Anan l'chiyuvei gavra palgud nizka sinon. We only came to testify on a chatzin ezek, so why do we have to pay nezek sholem? Now, from this point on, Rashi insists that the Gemara is going to try to explain this brisa according to the man diomer Yehudei Turah. It can't work out if you hold Yehudei gavra because there's no kasha zomam here. Oh. So the Gemara answers, you know what? Each pair of Edom knew exactly what the other pair of Edom that came on that same day to court was intending to testify. The Kamar Ramze Ramuze. Each cat makes a sign, again, I don't know exactly what this remez is, to the cat that comes beyond it, after it, that we are coming to testify against Ploni Almoni because his shar was Nogeach. Again, Rashi insists that if you hold Yehudei Gavra, there's no way of explaining this price and justify, because each cat comes on a different day. How can you say that each cat gave a remez to the other cat? But if you're interested, not for us now, Tosis tries to explain that this price could work out even if I hold Yehudei Gavra. Rav Ashi Omar, Shebo Ritzufim. It's not that, you know, one cat came into Bezdin and another cat came in, and you don't have to introduce this ukimta that there was a remez and so forth and so on. there were subliminal messages being sent back and forth, but they all came together into Beis Din, and they knew, even the later ones knew, that the earlier ones were testifying, and that they're establishing the Shor as a Shor Amud. Ravina Amar, Ravina's answer to explain why all three pairs of Edim are Chayiv B'Torah's Kasha. Some of this is a more complex answer. We'll try to explain it the best we can. B'makirin Balashor V'ein Makirin Esashor. The Edim know that the owner of the Shor is the owner of the Shor. In other words, they could testify against him that his Shor was no geth. They don't recognize necessarily the Shor. You know, they can't walk into the corral and say, well, amongst Reuven's Shvarim, you know, he has all these oxen, this particular ox was the one that was no geth. Oh. If that be the case, Rashi explains, you cannot assume, it's impossible to assume, it's an untenable position, that the Edim are coming to be Mechayev, the Bailim, Chatzinezek of a short time is totally irrelevant here. Totally inapplicable. Why? Because there's halacha in short time that a short time only pays migufo. Meaning the ceiling price for the half compensation is the value of the animal. If they don't identify the animal, they don't know which animal, ein makir es ashor, then the whole halacha of imposing a chiyuv of compensation chatzinezek is inapplicable. The Edom could only come for one and only one reason, and that is to establish a shara muat in order to establish a chiyuv of nezek shalem. Well, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Where's the shara muat here? They can't identify the shara. In fact, the Gemara Lehechi the Miyade, how could they establish this Shor as a Shor Muad when they can't even identify the Shor? The Amri, they say, Tura Nagcha Islacha Bibakroch. We can testify that we know that you have a Shor Hamuad, but we're not sure which one it is. They got lost amongst the others, or it got lost amongst the others. Is he Boilachal in Ture Lekule Bakara? You have an obligation to provide full-fledged shmirah, as if you had a shor muad, because you do have a shor muad, and that shmirah has to be provided for all the shvarim. And Rashi insists once again that this answer of Ravina goes according to Mandi Omar Yidi Tura. If you hold Yidi Gavra, why should the first two pairs of Edim have to chip in to Nezek Sholem under the law of Kasher Zoma? Tosus again try to work out and reconcile this Vraisa with the Mani Omer who holds Yidi Gavra. And you'll take a look in Tosfos and other Rishonim, not just Tosfos, but Rashi is consistent here that we're holding Yehude Tura. A new suffix in the Gemara. Yiboy Lehu Hamashase Kalbo Shal Chaver B'Chavero. There are three individuals here. There's the Balakelev, there's the victim, the Nizak, and then there's the Meshasa. The Meshasa is the one who took the Kelev of his friend and instigated it so that it would sig someone, sig him, as we say. And he attacked his friend, meaning a third party, Mahu. Now, the Mahu is the following. Who has to pay the victim? The Gemara says, Meshasa Vadei Potter. Interesting. Intuitively, we would have said the Meshasa, he's the instigator, he should pay. No, he's certainly potter because that's called Groma Benezikin. Ah. But the Balakelev, my, after all, the owner of the Kelev should have been protecting his animal such that no one could instigate and send his animal on a mission to attack somebody. Me, I mean, should we say Motzi Omer Le? Can the owner of the Kelev defend himself with the following argument? I was totally passive. And my animal would not have attacked this victim if not for the fact that someone instigated this. O Dilma Amrinale, should we say to the Bala Kelev, Kevin the Yadit Bekalboch, the Meshasile, Umishtaise? In other words, you knew very well, or you should have known at least, you recognize the nature of your animal, the beast, of this dog, that if somebody would be Megara Oso, they would instigate him, he would be Mizgara, and he would go out and do damages, is loi boilachal lashuhuye. You shouldn't have left him, you know, sitting around in a public domain. That's a pshia and it's shmira. And therefore, the Bala Kelev should be paying over abzera tashma. Let's prove this from our Mishnah. The Mishnah says vitam. Shehu atinokus mishamshim bo ve'enogech. Rabbi Meir says that the Shah refrained from the Gicha on three occasions, even on the same day, in which the Tinokus were Megara. Hanogeach. Had the Shah responded to this antagonism, I think a better word than antagonize would be provocate, or to provoke. Let's use that word, to provoke. I don't know if there's a word, provocate. To provoke. There was a provocation. There was a provoking on the part of the Tinokes. And nevertheless, the implication of our Mishnah is that the owner of the Shor would pay damages. So we see that Girui, which means a provocation, is still within the purview of Negicha. And therefore, we should conclude that the owner of the Kelev is responsible for being poshe. He wasn't watching his dog in the way he should have. And he should have realized that anyone could come along and provoke his dog, antagonize it, and get it to attack someone and victimize someone. Abai rejects this proof. Omar Abai miktoni nago chayov. The subject of our Mishnah is not what would be if the Shor would respond to this provocation and attack, but rather Dilma Honagach lo avitam. If it was nogeach, what the Mishnah is saying is that it would not have a chazora. But at the same time, it doesn't have to pay damages if this mishmush, if the tinok provoked the shor and it damaged. The Mishnah is only focused on the question of chazor. Chazor means that it wasn't nogeach and therefore it was chozer, despite the provocation, it refrained from belligerency. But if it was belligerent and responded to that provocation, maybe the owner of the shor would be potter. Toshma, I'll bring you a different proof for the Mishnah in Sanhedrin in the case of Ritzicha. Shisa bo esakelev, shisa bo esanochash. If Reuven provokes a dog or a serpent to kill someone, potur, that's not called Ritzicha, that's only Groma. My love, potur, mishasa v'chayv balakelev. But the owner of the kelev, the owner of the serpent, would have to pay damages, b'toris momen amazik. Mar says, lo, ema perhaps, poter af mishase. The Mishnah wants to tell me that not only is the owner of the animal, or the serpent, poter, but even the mishase, the one who actually took the animal and sent it out to victimize, that person is poter as well. As far as the Bala Kelev is concerned, that's upgrade, that's simple, that he's potter. The Mishnah didn't even have to write it. Omar Rava, imtim tzolomar hameshase kalbo shel chaver b'chavero. Chayov. If you're going to tell me that the owner of the dog is chayov, again, we don't have a pshitus, we had a suffix, we didn't determine the tip the scale in any way, but if you were to argue that he's chayev, she so hu bi atzmo potter. This is very paradoxical. Rava says that if Reuven is mishasa the kelev of Shimon, and according to one side, Shimon, the owner of the dog, is chayev, so Reuven was mishasa the kelev of Shimon to Levi, is Shimon, the owner of the dog, has to pay damages to Levi. But if the dog was Mishasa himself, if he was Mazik, I should say, the Mishasa himself, then the Bala Kelev is Potur. So Reuven sends out the dog of Shimon, and the dog of Shimon actually damages Reuven. So on the one hand, Shimon is responsible, according to this tzad of Rav and the Chakira, because he wasn't watching his animal properly, but yet Reuven is not totally guiltless, because after all, he was the Meshaseh who started this whole process. Says Rava, we can apply a principle here that would rule that in this case, Shimon, the owner of the Kelev, is Potter. Why? My timer. What is that rule? Kol HaMeshana Uba Acher V'Shino Bo Potter. If you start with the Shinui on the part of the Nizak did something unusual. He had no right to do such a thing. It was an unethical act to begin with, so to speak, within the context of the laws of damages. Then even though he was damaged by someone who normally would pay damages, in this case, we alleviate the mazik from paying damages because the mazik is only following a shinui. And what's this case? The classical paradigm of this principle of Hamashane, Amalei Rav Pavla Rava, Itmer Shmeid Reish Lakish Kavasek, this is the case of Reish Lakish. Shtei Paros, Amalei Reish Lakish, Shtei Paros, B'Shus HaRabim. You have two cows in the Reshus HaRabim. Now keep in mind that Keren B'Shus HaRabim is Chayav, so if one of these cows attacks the other cow, he should pay. But the Nizak, the victimized cow, did something mishunadik, did something that he shouldn't have done. What did the cow do? Achas revutza. Instead of the cow walking on 4 feet through Rishus HaRabim, the cow is laid out on its back, kicking up its feet. Achas maleches. The other cow, which is the mazik here, the damager, is walking through Rishus HaRabim. Ubata maleches bervutza. And clearly, as an act of belligerency, a keren, a classical keren, the shor that's walking kicks the shor of the revutza. Is Reish Lakish says ptura, the shor hamaleches, even though it did a classical act of belligerent of negicha, in this case beita, which is a told of negicha of keren, is potter. Why? Because it's b'achar shino, because the nizak started with a shinui. Who gave rights to the animal to lay down in Rishus HaRabim? That's already a change, a shinui. However, revutza b'maleches, if the revutza laying on its back now kicks up and kicks the cow that's walking through Rishus HaRabim in its belly, chayevus, then it has to pay. Why? Because the Shor HaMaleches had no shinui, and the Revutza therefore is doing an act of keren. Amalei, Rava said to Rav Papa, Ana bahi, my opinion in the case of Bata, Mehaleches Bervutza Chiyuve Mechaivna, I would have said in that case, the owner of the Shor HaMazik should pay damages. And this would not fit into the general Klal, the principle of Kol HaMeshana. Why? Damrina lei ki islecha reshusa lisaguye alai, but levute be leslecha reshusa. It's true that we give you reshus to walk your parah through Rishus HaRabim, and if there's another cow that's laying on the ground on its back, you could walk on, step over it, but levute be to kick the parah, that you don't have reshus, and therefore the bata has to pay damages under law of Keren, and we suspend the principle of Kol HaMeshana. And what that means is that the original Shinui is what caused the damage. In the case of the Meshase, his Shinui is what actually instigated this Nezek. He said Sigum, to the animal and set it up there. But in the case of the Revutza, again, that's a Shinui, but nevertheless, that revita is not a cause for the second para to kick it. I mean, again, it could walk over it, but not to kick it. So the first shinui of the nizak is not the goreim of the hezek. And when do we apply the principle of kol HaMeshana u'bachar v'shinui b'pato? That's only if the original shinui is in some sense a goreim, a cause of the ultimate hezek. We'll begin the next Mishnah. The Mishnah deals with the case of Shor HaMazik Brishus HaNizak, which was mentioned back in the Mishnah on Daf Tes Vav Amid Beis as one of the five cases of Muadim. Shor HaMazik Brishus HaNizak, Ketzad, Nogach, Nogaf, Noshach, Rovatz, Boat. All these are cases of toldos of keret, where the animal gores with its horns, or pushes with its body, or bites with its teeth, or jumps and breaks utensils, or kicks and breaks something. All these are toldos of keret. They were done bekavon in a very unusual way. There's no anah that the animal gets from any of these cases, so it's not chain or regel. And therefore, Rishus HaRabim, if it happens in Rishus HaRabim, even though Shein Regal Potter Rishus HaRabim, but Shein is Chai Rishus HaRabim, but Mishalem, Chatzi Nezek, since this is an unusual behavior, it comes Shar Tam Keren Tam. Rishus HaNizak, even though it happened in Rishus HaNizak. So that the Chiddush here, the Chachamim, we're about to see Rabbi Tarfon's disagreement, is that it matters not whether the Shartam was Mazik Bishus HaRabim, the classical case, and that incurs a Chiyuv of Nezik, of Chatzi Nezik, or if the Shartam was Mazik B'Keren in the Rishus HaNizak. Even though, again, this is a more severe criminal act, you know, to allow your Shar to go into the private property of Yenim and be Mazik, but nevertheless, it still remains Shartam. You didn't anticipate the belligerency of your shor, and if you only pay chatzi nezek, Rabbi Tarfon omer nezek sholem. The sheet of Rabbi Tarfon, which we'll see, is based on a kal v'chomer, is that in this case where the keren took place, the hezek took place in the rishus hanizak, the owner of the shor has to pay nezek sholem. Chachomim omerim chatzi nezek. Chachomim insist that the Torah says that Karen, whether it's Bishus HaRab, Bishus HaNizak, pays Chatzi Nezek. That's the halach of Ta'am. And we're going to reject any Kal V'chomer to the contrary. Omer Lehem, Rabbi Tarfon counters against the Chachamim. I have a Kal V'chomer to establish that Karen, Bishus HaNizak, pays Nezek Sholem. Ma b'mokom shehekil. Al Shein v'al Regel Rishus HaRabim. Shein v'regel relative to Karen is Kula, because in Rishus HaRabim, Shehu Potter, he doesn't have to pay. The Torah says, Ubir b'stei acher, to the exclusion of Rishus HaRabim. And nevertheless, Hichmir Aleim Rishus HaNizak, L'shalim Nezek Shalim. Paradoxically, even though the Torah was more makil in Shein v'regel, and completely alleviated the obligation to pay damages if the hezek took place for Sarab, and nevertheless in Rishus HaNizak the Torah clamps down and says that the Shein Regel has to pay Nezek Sholem, Meitav Sadeo, Meitav Karmo Yishalem, is B'makom Shehichmir, when the Torah is more machmir, namely Al Karen, because Karen pays even Rishus HaRabim, where Shein Regel is part of Rishus HaRabim, is L'shalem Chatzi Nezek, is Einodin. How much more so, Shenachmir Olav Birshus HaNizak. So if we take a look at Rishus HaRabim, we come to the conclusion that Karen is Chomer relative to Shein V'Regel, and therefore we want to establish that Chumra, in that relativity, when we compare Karen to Shein V'Regel in the case of Rishus HaNizak. L'shalim Nezek Sholem, meaning that if in the case of Shein V'Regel, Rishus HaNizak, you pay Nezek Sholem, how much more so in the case of Karen, where the Torah already in Rishus HaRabim has established the Chumra of Karen over Shein V'Regel, certainly it should have to pay Nezek Sholem. Amru lo, the Chachamim say, Dayo levo min adin lios kinidon. We have a technical rule that limits Kal V'Chomer, and that's called Dayo, and which means that you want to learn Karen Birshus HaNizak with the Kal V'Chomer for Karen Birshus HaRabim, well, Dayu L'Vom and Adin. You're basing yourself on, notice the Kal V'Chomer is really focused on Rishus HaRabim, right? Because we saw the Chumra of Karen in Rishus HaRabim, that you're chayev, whereas the general rule in Shein V'Regel is you're potter Rishus HaRabim. Now, take from Karen Birshus HaRabim and apply it to the Chatzi Nezek. Karen Birshus HaNizak. And Karen Birshus HaRabim is only chayev Chatzi Nezek. How can you now establish that Karen Birshus HaNizak should be chayev more, exceed beyond Karen Birshus HaRabim? If Karen Birshus HaRabim is limited to Chatzi Nezek, then if you derive it from Karen Birshus HaRabim, the case of Nezek, it's got to be limited by the same Chatzi Nezek. And that's what the Chachamim spell out. Ma birshus harabim chatzi nezek, meaning you only pay maximum chatzi nezek, is af birshus hanizak chatzi nezek. So Rabbi Tarfon counters to the Chachamim, af ani, and here we're looking at the Mishnah, the continuation of the Mishnah, Chaf Hei Amid Aleph, lo adun mikeren, I'm not going to derive it from this kavachomer from Kerem Shisaravim, because then I'm limited with Dayo. Ani Adun Keren Miregel. I'm not deriving Keren from in Chatzar Nizak from Keren Shisaravim. I'm going to derive Keren Chatzar Nizak from Regel Chatzar Nizak. Mama Mokum Sheikel Hashem al Regel Shisaravim Hechmir Bekeren. The Torah is Machmir and Keren Shisar Nizak to pay Nezek Shalem is Mokum Sheikhmir. Al Shein V'Regel B'Shus HaNizak. The Torah was Mekil in Shein V'Regel B'Shus HaRabim, but was Machmir in Shein V'Regel B'Shus HaNizak to pay, and in this case you pay Nezek Shalim, is Eino Din She Nachmir B'Keren. How much more so do we have to be Machmir in Keren B'Shus HaNizak to pay Nezek Shalim? So basically what Rabbi Tarfon is trying to do is shift the logic of his Kal V'Chomer from Keren B'Shus HaRabim to Keren B'Shus HaNizak, because then he's going to face the problem of Dayo, to Shein V'Regel. And if the focus of the Kal V'Chomer is on Shein V'Regel, the Torah was Machmir and Shus HaNizak with regard to Shein V'Regel, then how much more so the Torah would be Machmir and Shus HaNizak with regard to Keren, and the payment is Nezek Sholeh. Nevertheless, the Chachomim are not convinced. Amru lo, the Chachom respond, even on this Kal V'Chomer there's Dayo Levam Nedin Lios Kenod. Why? Because at the end of the day, you're basing yourself on Keren B'Shus HaRabim. Right? Why you set up the Kal V'Chomer? Because you're telling me that Keren B'Shus HaRabim is Chayev, whereas Shein V'Regel is not Chayev. Is Ma B'Shus HaRabim Chatzi Nezek? Af B'Shus HaNizak Chatzi Nezek. Since Keren Tama in B'Shus HaRabim pays maximum Chatzi Nezek, you cannot possibly derive that B'Shus HaNizak you would pay Nezek Sholem. So we'll stop here to Mirtz Hashem. In the next year, we'll start the sugya on the sixth line down from the top of page, Chaf Hei Amid Aleph.